Live from the WTVP studios in Peoria, Illinois, this is the Illinois Republican gubernatorial primary debate. Tonight's program is produced in partnership with the Illinois Public Radio and Television Stations and the Illinois League of Women Voters.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us for the Illinois Republican gubernatorial primary debate. It is a statewide debate, so we want to thank all the stations on the PBS and NPR affiliates throughout Illinois for airing the debate. I'm H. Wayne Wilson. I'm the host of At Issue here at WTVP-TV in Peoria, and I'll be moderating this evening's 90-minute debate as well as the 30-minute post-debate analysis. We have a studio audience here, and we have advised them that we would appreciate them not showing any outward displays during the debate until the final moments. Now, let's meet the panelists who will be asking the questions of our candidates. First, let's introduce to you Jack Tichner. Jack is the host of Illinois Lawmakers and from WSIU in Carbondale. Seated next to him is Jim Meadows, the host of Focus at WILL in Urbana-Champaign. And our female representative this evening is Amanda Vinicky. Amanda is the chief WUIS. That's a tough one to say. WUIS in Springfield. Thank you for being here. And we have Shakur Cope. And Shakur is a student at the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, and he is also an intern with the Associated Press. And now, let's meet the candidates running for the Republican nomination. First, from left to right, we have Bill Brady of Bloomington, Dan Rutherford of Shenoah, Bruce Rauner of Winnetka, and Kirk Dillard of Hinsdale. The format for tonight's debate is three rounds of four questions each. The first round will be 90-second responses, the second round will be 60-second responses, and the third round, 30-second responses. Rather than rebuttals, we have allotted time for the candidates to respond at various points during the debate for clarification, where they can address or expand on what they've already talked about on previously discussed issues. We, by a drawing of ping pong balls, will have opening statements, and those are 90 seconds in length. That drawing of ping pong balls revealed that our first responder is Bill Brady. Mr. Brady.
Wayne, thank you, and thank you to the League of Women Voters and to public television radio throughout Illinois for giving us this opportunity to introduce ourselves to the voters of Illinois as they have to make this very important decision about who's best to lead our state in the future. As I travel around the state, I must confess a number of people have asked me, why would anyone want to be governor of Illinois? They usually go on to say, our governors seem to spend more time in jail than in office. But the truth of the matter is, I'm running for governor because I believe in Illinois. My wife, Nancy, and I have been married for 32 years. I grew up in Bloomington, Illinois, and met her at Illinois Wesleyan. We chose to raise our three children in Bloomington and build a few businesses that employ people throughout central Illinois. We believe in Illinois because we believe in its people. Illinois has a rich heritage, and it needs rich leadership. Leadership with a bold initiative. Leadership with a background that understands the struggles, the challenges, and the opportunity that face Illinois citizens every day. As a businessman, I provide that background. As a member of the Illinois General Assembly, I also provide the experience in leadership. This election is about not only who can beat Pat Quinn, but who can best lead our state in the future. I look forward to the opportunity to identify the differences between the four of us. Thank you.
Next, with the opening statement, is Dan Rutherford. Dan.
Thank you very much to the League. I appreciate you hosting this tonight. I want to take my 90 seconds with you to tell you a little who I am. I grew up here in central Illinois, and my mom and dad had a pizza restaurant. Had to work during that time and had to wash dishes and wait on tables. I actually was making change as a young kid without a computer telling me how much change to hand back to people. You think about that in today's world. I went to school at Illinois State University. I know I'm here where Bradley is, and we love to play you guys at Ellen basketball. I worked at Ivani's, and I don't mean the Ivani's in Peoria. I mean the Ivani's in Bloomington Normal. And I shoveled asphalt during the summers, and that's how I paid my way through college. And the reason I tell you that is because I was able to do it without any student loans. A kid can't do that today anymore. You can't go to a university and work making pizzas and shovel asphalt and be an RA in the residence halls and work all the time and miss some of the football games and be able to afford to go to school without a student loan. That's in part why I want to be the governor of Illinois. I've also served in the legislature very proudly, and a lot of it right here in the heart of Illinois area. I've had the opportunity to be a citizen legislator. I had the opportunity to be a vice president of a Fortune 100 company. For 25 years, I opened businesses in countries that had multiple ethnicity and religions. That same time later on, I also had the opportunity to be elected treasurer of the state of Illinois. So I've had legislative experience as a citizen legislator, as a businessman, and in the executive branch of government. I believe that's why I'm qualified to be your next governor of the state of Illinois.
Next, we have Bruce Rauner of Winnetka.
Good evening. It's an honor to be with you. Thank you to the League of Women Voters of Illinois. Thank you to the Illinois public broadcasters. I'm excited and honored to be here in Peoria with you tonight. I'm here because I love the state of Illinois passionately. I was born and raised here. My wife and I raised our 6 children here. I've built a number of successful businesses here. I love it. I'm proud of this state. We used to be a great state. We used to be a proud state. We aren't anymore. We've lost our way. We've entered a long period of decline. Businesses are leaving. Schools are deteriorating. It's tragic. And I won't sit back and wait and watch while the career politicians and the special interest groups in Springfield take us down a long road of decline. I just won't stand for it. I'm not a politician. I'm a self-made business guy. But I know how to drive results. I know how to work. I know how to fight. I know how to win. And I want to go to work for you to transform our state, fundamentally change our state, so we're proud, prosperous, growing again. I'm running to accomplish 4 things for you, for the people of Illinois. Number 1, to focus on a booming economy, creating jobs for everyone who wants to work. Number 2 is to rein in the out-of-control spending in Springfield so we can reduce the tax burden here. Number 3 is to focus on education so our education and job training is world-class in Illinois. And number 4 is to put term limits on all the career politicians in Springfield so it's 8 years and out and we're public servants again rather than career politicians for decades in office. I'm excited to go to work for you. I'm eager to earn your vote. Thank you.
And with his opening statement, Kirk Dillard.
Thank you. It's great to be back in Peoria. And when I travel this state that I love so deeply, I introduce myself and I say, I'm State Senator Kirk Dillard and I'm running for governor. And I always ask people, how's Illinois working today? And they exclaim loudly, it's not. They say that they want more jobs. They want less taxes. They want fewer regulations. And they say they want this state's reputation back, that the cadence of corruption must end. We've got to retain and get back our competitive advantage with the rest of the Midwest. Illinois is the economic capital of the Midwest, and we should settle for nothing less. We have great infrastructure. We have the best location we could be given. And we also have natural resources that no other state around us has. No one should be outperforming Illinois economically. My wife, Stephanie, and I have a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old daughter. I want my daughters to be 10 minutes from me, not 10 hours, like I want your children and grandchildren to be, because they can't find a job. It is time that we all get together and make this state work again.
Thank you, candidates. We now begin the question and answer session. And the first question will come from Jack Tichner of WSIU in Carbondale. He will address the question first to Dan Rutherford.
Mr. Rutherford, in an interview earlier today on WBEZ Radio in Chicago, the Senate President John Cullerton, the Democrat of Chicago, reached out to whoever wins the GOP nomination for governor, saying that he wants to talk about the economy, wants to talk about state finances in particular, because if one of you wins at the end of the day, you'll be in charge of the state for the last half of the fiscal year 2015. Mm-hmm. And that's important for a number of reasons, but most importantly, the governor's office of management and budget estimates the state's budget deficit will hit nearly $2 billion in fiscal year 2015 and grow to $4.6 billion by fiscal year 2017. if the state's current temporary income tax expires on schedule. At the same time, the state's backlog of bills will grow from around $5.5 billion by the end of the current fiscal year to over $16 billion in 2017 if that tax is not renewed. Should the increase be made permanent? If not, tell us where you'd make the cuts needed to make up the deficit and pay the back bills. That's about $20 billion in funds over 3 years. Name at least three programs that you think that you could cut immediately upon taking office to help make up the difference.
Well, that was quite a question. You realize I only have 90 seconds to respond to it, don't you? So let me just go right to the quick of your question, Jack, in regards to the income tax increase. I want everybody out there in TV land and everyone in this audience to get it real clear. I don't want it to stay. I don't want it to stay. I don't want it to stay. Now, with all respect to the Senate president, within the last next year, before I become the governor, is the state pension bill going to be viewed to be constitutional or not? I don't think so. If it's not, that's a whole different issue I'm going to have to deal with as governor. Are they going to have their spending in line, the borrowing in line? There's a lot that's going to happen in the next year and a month before I become the governor of the state of Illinois. What I will tell you is that I don't want that income tax increase to stay, but I think where Governor Quinn messed it up in January 2011 is when he signed it into law, all he did was bring in money. He didn't bring about a complete resolution to the financial problems of our state. When I'm the governor of Illinois and I sit down with President Cullerton and Speaker Madigan and the Republican leaders, I'm going to have an opportunity to have everything on the table. I'm going to do a standard of performance, a review of the office of governor and all state agencies like I did in the treasurer's office. I cut the budget of the state treasurer's office by 2%, next fiscal year 3%, and then 5%, a total of 10%. I've got the experience to do that.
Mr. Rauner.
I am very excited to go to work for the people of Illinois to turn the fiscal situation in our state around. I would focus on a number of issues. Number one is to pursue true pension reform. Not marginal pension reform, not that which only solves a tiny bit of the problem like we just did. We just passed a pension bill that unfortunately is really just a Band-Aid on an open wound. We need major pension reform. And to do that, I will advocate moving our government employees into a defined contribution plan for their future work, not changing their prior work, their future work. That can dramatically change the numbers and the spending levels in the state, number one. Number two, we should fundamentally transform our Medicaid system. I believe very strongly in a strong social services safety net, but Medicaid in Illinois is broken, and unfortunately, it's corrupt. Based on studies that have come to light recently, it looks like close to half of the enrollees in our Medicaid system aren't entitled to be receiving the benefits they are getting based on the report so far. We've got to change it fundamentally. And number three, we've got to take on the spending inside the government operation because it's highly inefficient and wasteful. The sad fact is the government union bosses that control Springfield have unworkable structures, work rules in place, very high pay, and we've got to stand up and negotiate with them creatively and aggressively to bring down the spending so we can restore good fiscal management in the state.
Jack, I didn't vote for the 67% Democrat income tax increase, and that tax should be rolled back. I believe we need a constitutional amendment. If you want one game changer in a constitutional amendment, aside from the FairMap plan that the League of Women Voters have courageously put forward, we need a constitutional amendment that says the legislature must balance its budget audited by the Auditor General or they don't get paid. Yesterday or the day before, I announced when I said I wanted to cut the state's sales tax on gas, I said that Kirk Dillard and my running mate, Jill Tracy, good Southern Illinois woman who's watching in Marion tonight, Jack, we are going to chair a top-to-bottom blue ribbon panel of tax experts, of business people in this state, and taxpayer advocates. And we need a top-to-bottom overhaul of our archaic tax structure in Illinois. No state has ever taxed its way into prosperity. We also must have pension reform, as it's been pointed out. But if you really want to find savings, it's got to be in the Medicaid system in Illinois. Medicaid is our state's largest expenditure. We sadly spend more on Medicaid than we do on programs like education. I've been there. I've managed the Medicaid program once before as a governor's chief of staff in the state. And if you really are looking for savings, it's got to come from the Medicaid system of the state of Illinois.
And Mr. Brady.
Jack, well, in respect to the income tax, I'm not going to tell you I don't want it to stay, or I'm not going to tell you it should go away. I'm going to promise the people of Illinois that I will veto any attempt by the Democrats to extend it. Now, why? Well, last week we were rated as the 50th worst state in the nation forecasted for job performance. Florida and Texas are in the top five. They're large states like us. We need a governor who will take the bold initiative not only to make sure the income tax extension goes away, but put us on a path to eliminating the personal income tax so we can grow like Florida and Texas. As far as cuts, it's not up to the legislature, it's up to the governor. The governor has to manage the budget. The governor has to demand the legislature not spend more than they have. Pension reform was number one. I know what it's like to take tough votes. That was meaningful. You know, it wasn't easy to tell people who paid into the system we're going to cut the way their pension grows. But it'll save the taxpayers $190 billion and protect the interests of the pensioners and give us $1.2 billion to meet the needs of the state in the very first year. We also need a governor who will manage Medicaid, the biggest single catastrophe of our system. It's not fair to the people who are entitled to Medicaid, the waste, the abuse, and the fraud, and the mismanagement. We can save billions of dollars. And lastly, the third one I'll give you is eliminating the State Board of Education, partly because it saves money, but mostly because it'll end the bureaucratic red tape that harms our children's educational opportunities every day.
Our next question comes from Jim Meadows of WILL in Urbana-Champaign. He will direct it first to Bruce Rauner.
Mr. Rauner, in your view, what is the legitimate purpose served by a minimum wage? And what do you believe are the right conditions that must exist to justify raising the minimum wage?
The minimum wage is a tool that can be used to help struggling families who are unable to make ends meet. It's a double-edged sword, however, and we need to be very thoughtful and cautious in our consideration of it. Raising the minimum wage can help struggling families. However, raising the minimum wage can hurt small business owners and cause them to leave or close their doors or replace workers with machines. And that can end up hurting the very struggling families, struggling workers it's designed to help. So we have to be very cautious about it. I will support raising the minimum wage in Illinois if, and only if, we combine that with comprehensive pro-business reforms so our small business owners can afford to pay a higher minimum wage. And to do that, I would combine it with comprehensive workers' comp reform, comprehensive tax reform, and comprehensive tort reform. Together, those things can help small businesses afford to pay a higher minimum wage. But let's be clear, we need to focus not on the minimum wage, we need to focus on maximum opportunity for the workers of Illinois. To do that, we need a booming economy where companies are competing to hire workers, driving wages up through competition and rapid growth, combined with world-class education and vocational training for everyone in Illinois of all ages so they can maximize their career earnings over time. That's the best way to raise wages for every worker.
Mr. Dillard.
Thank you. The minimum wage is set to make sure that in some sad cases, there's not someone taking advantage of student workers or individuals. But let's get it clear. No one should be raising a family on a minimum wage. We should not make that the bar. We need good jobs in Illinois, ones that have benefits, ones that are not at a minimum wage. The minimum wage is going to fluctuate. It is clearly needed to be higher in a place like Chicago than it would be in rural Tennessee. So you have a minimum wage, but you let the marketplace set the upper limits of the minimum wage. But again, nobody should be living on a minimum wage. We need to focus on good paying jobs. And there is empirical data that shows when you raise the minimum wage, those who truly need those jobs, students at Bradley University here in Peoria or a part-time worker, there will be fewer of those jobs available for them.
Mr. Brady.
The question of a minimum wage is a serious one. It requires both caution, but it also demands consistency. In October, Bruce Rauner called for cutting the minimum wage by $1 an hour. Kirk Dillard called for eliminating it by letting the marketplace rule. In my opinion, those positions are out of touch with the challenges that working families are dealing with in the state of Illinois each and every day. Even businesses don't want to see a cut in the minimum wage. They don't want to see their employees' morale reduced and pay cut. But you also have to realize we can't afford to raise it. We're already higher than the national average in every other surrounding state. Bruce Rauner and Pat Quinn have both called for also raising the minimum wage. This is not done with caution, and it's not consistent. Last time we raised the minimum wage, we saw the sharpest increase in unemployment in recent state history. We need a governor who's going to be consistent on these issues, a governor who understands the challenges that families deal with each and every day, putting food on the table, and a governor that understands the challenges that businesses grapple with each and every day, meeting a payroll, making workers' compensation premiums. I call for a moratorium on increasing it. Let businesses know that we're not going to raise the minimum wage on their backs, and we're not going to hurt people who want an entry-level job.
Great. Thank you very much. You know, Jim, to your question, I do not support lowering the minimum wage, and I do not support increasing the minimum wage at this time. And I think that's a very important operative part of it. You know, I concur with my Senate colleague, Senator Dillard, with regards to that we don't want to have this be the base into which people try to aspire to just to be at minimum wage. We need to work to help build the opportunity. The minimum wage is something that no longer needs to be around here because people are making much beyond that. The idea of having a minimum wage, though, has been put into place so people aren't abused. And it's not just young people. It's also maturesters, those who are out trying to supplement income from other opportunities. So as I look to the future, and when I am the governor of Illinois, the idea of where we may go in the future on a minimum wage is going to be contingent upon many other factors out there, where we are in the growth of this economy, where we are in regards to other business factors going on out there, where we are with regards to other taxes on our business. It needs to be a part of a comprehensive discussion. I would look forward to leading that as the governor.
Our next question will first go to Kirk Dillard, and it will come from from Amanda Vinicky.
Skipping me, Hyatt. I've seen quotes from all four of you that you want to run the state of Illinois like a business. And I want to know what you really mean by that. How do you create a business model for a company that doesn't get to choose its customers, millions of whom depend on the state for all manner of services, ranging from teaching school to caring for the elderly and others who are unable to care for themselves? You can't spend them off to another state if they're a loss leader. You can't go bankrupt if they fail. And you don't even get to determine the products because that's determined by your 177-member board, who you need to get a majority of on your side and for, you know, things, for example, if they try and override your decisions with vetoes. So what does running government like a business really look like to you?
Looks like it did when I was Governor Edgar's chief of staff and we had a clean and competent governor of Illinois. Don't take my word for it. For the first time in the state's history under Jim Edgar in his second term, the credit rating of this state actually went up. We inherited $1 billion deficit in a recession and left $1.5 billion surplus, all without an income tax increase. The state paid its bills in 17 days toward the end of that administration. And most importantly, the unemployment rate of Illinois was below the national average. But yet we increased funding for children's programs, the Department of Children and Family Services. We doubled the rate of inflation of new money for public schools in Illinois and created a school construction program, which helped drive down real estate taxes in the beleaguered suburbs in places like Peoria and downstate Illinois. You know, I always, and I respect Mr. Rauner a lot for the money that he has made. I don't always agree with him how he made it, but I respect that. But running the state of Illinois is different than running General Motors Corporation. You have a board of directors of 177 members of the Illinois General Assembly, most of whom, including sometimes members of your own party, that don't want you to succeed. You've got to know how to make, and whether I like it or not, Speaker Madigan's going to continue to be the speaker at least through the next election cycle, and you've got to know how to run this state with a Democrat-controlled legislature. And I've done that.
And Mr. Brady.
Well, I think running it like a business means being efficient, being growth-oriented. And to do so, you have to have good people working with you. You can't have a governor who's attacking state employees constantly. You've got to have a governor who can motivate those employees to do what the business world does and get them to help move the business along. You've also have to have a governor that's growth-oriented, a governor who knows that the future of your state and of its citizens depend on how your state grows. To do that, a governor's going to have bold initiatives like the pension reform program, like cutting taxes, like putting on a path of prosperity so businesses know they can invest in Illinois. We also need a governor who will think of the future. That's why education reform and our future in education is so important. And we also have to have a governor who will clean up the state of corruption that has so darkened the eye of Illinois. We have to rid ourselves of clout. We have to rid ourselves of pay-to-play politics. We need someone who's going to draw a line in the sand on ethics and reform, and then go out and market. In business, we have to market what we have. We need a governor who can go out and market all the tremendous assets Illinois has, from its riverways to its roadways, the great people and the universities, the diversity, the agricultural base. We need a governor who knows how to sell what Illinois has for the people of Illinois. A governor who will bring prosperity like we try to do for businesses.
Mr. Rutherford.
You know, coming from the private sector, I've heard that said many a time by people about, you know, we run a government like a business. Well, the difference between running government like a business is you don't have stock incentive. You can't give employee share profit. And by the way, you can't give an end-of-the-year bonus. So the way you need to do it, in my opinion, is two things by the chief executive officer. One of them is having a performance review. Just like I did when I became the treasurer of Illinois, I had outside volunteers, experts, and everything from all kinds of education to religion to business look at everything we did in the treasurer's office. And where there was redundancy, we got rid of it. And where there were things like a product, a service that wasn't wanted, we took it off the menu, just like you do in a restaurant. And we were able to cut our budget and be more streamlined. The other is then put together a standard of performance. So what are the objectives that the people that work in all of the state agencies can have is, here is the definition of success. I did that. The iCash Unclaimed Property Program, I've marketed the daylights out of it. You're darn right I have. And we've had a 70% growth in the amount of money returned to the public of Illinois than for my predecessor. The Bright Start 529 program, we've just reached $6 billion, $1 billion growth in assets in 1 year. We've also had the opportunity to look at our investment portfolio. And when my staff helped us reach those, we accoladed, we congratulated, we knew where we had success. You put those standards of performance throughout all of areas of government and appreciate your employees, we're going to be more efficient.
And Mr. Browner.
In business, we are all about driving results. In government, it's about bureaucracy and running a process. The difference is results versus process. I want to bring business discipline and drive to results into our government. You know, you look around the nation, Mitch Daniels, I think he was the best governor in America when he turned Indiana around. He had extensive business experience, and he brought 30 superstars from Indiana's business community to the state capitol, allocated responsibility, and had them oversee the government. I will do exactly the same thing here. Rick Snyder, in Michigan, governor, former venture capitalist, just like me, became governor of Michigan, run big business principles. He's turning Michigan around. Rick Scott, business executive, turning around Florida. Business executives can bring leadership and results-driven operating skills to turn government around, and I'm excited to go do that. The simple fact is, I disagree with Dan, government workers absolutely can be put on incentive and they should be given incentives, merit pay for productivity and driving results. That's exactly what we need inside business. And we need to do what Mitch Daniels did when he turned Indiana around. He used executive order and the power of the governor's office to stand up to the power of the government union bosses that control state government around the nation and are driving up costs and driving down productivity. The taxpayers deserve to be represented in a forceful way by a strong leader who will run, make the government efficient and effective rather than run as a massive bureaucracy that benefits really the employees rather than the voters.
Up to this point, we've been answering questions. We also offer a clarification round. We're going to go to a clarification round right now. Up to this point, we've had first answers coming left to right. We're going to reverse that and go right to left. So with the clarification round and 60-second responses, we go first to Kirk Dillard.
Sure. First of all, Senator Brady said that I wanted to eliminate the minimum wage. That's not true. I think Bill is confused where I said I want the upper limits to be set by a free market. Got to have a minimum wage. In fact, I voted for one of the last four minimum wage increases in Illinois, had been raised for a while, and the economy was better. I would add, too, that to the question on how we cut our budget and get our fiscal house in order, you know, what sets all four of us, and we agree on this, we got to grow, and it's what's the difference between Republicans and Democrats. We believe the best way, if you need more money in the state treasury, is to grow the economy. So I just want to make sure that everybody understands, and I can speak for these three guys to my right, we all want to grow the economy. That's the best way, aside from running the state well, that you put more money into the state treasury. Just wanted to clarify that.
And Mr. Rauner.
I'd like to expand for a minute on how we can take on the spending problem in the state. In business, we think out this outside the box to drive real results. One of the things I want to do immediately upon becoming governor is to form a task force between the governor's office, leading county chairmen around the state, leading superintendents in schools around the state, and a few of the leading mayors, the most thoughtful, aggressive mayors around the state. Because our spending problems aren't only in Springfield. They are up and down state and local government. And in fact, the regulations between the government entities often bind and put restrictions on efforts to reduce spending. We've got to have a united effort across all leaders in government at every level together to come up with ways to drive down the spending, reduce the cost burden on our taxpayers, and revolutionize the tax code in this state, bring down the spending. I will get that done. We're going to think outside the box and solve our problems on spending.
Mr. Rutherford.
Actually, I think I was pretty clear in all that I said. And realizing that I'm the only one of the three that hasn't mentioned the other one in a somewhat of a disparaging way, I'm going to yield my time to each of them to keep going at it.
Thank you for the opportunity. Senator Dillard, I'm glad to hear you've redefined your upper limits on minimum wage. I'm not sure what that means, but the whole minimum wage issue has damaged the brand of, frankly, the Republican Party. I can't tell you how many times I've had to defend the fact that Republicans don't want to cut pay on hardworking families. I want to make it clear, I don't want to and will not provide a cut in the minimum wage. But I do want to make sure that families in Illinois prosper. We need to move away from this discussion of minimum wage, part-time, Obamacare jobs toward permanent, career-oriented jobs that people can raise a family on. As governor, that's going to be my number one priority, creating private sector jobs for hardworking, educated Illinois families.
Our next question comes from Shakur Cope, and he will direct it first to Bruce Rauner.
In yesterday's Daily Herald that pointed out the vast disparity in school spending rates per pupil in Chicago suburbs. Quoting from the article, on one end of the spectrum is an elementary school district in Lake Forest, which will collect about $30,000 in property taxes per student this year. On the opposite end is East Aurora Unit District 131, which has a property tax collection level of about $3,000 per student. The same is true for many downstate school districts where the only way poor schools can reach the minimum of their per pupil spending is because of the extra money they receive through poverty grants from the state school board. The state constitution says the state is responsible for providing the majority of school funding, but it's usually about 30%. One way of leveling the playing field would be the approach contained in Senate Bill 750 a few years back that would have increased income taxes in exchange for property tax relief. Would you support such a concept in general?
I would not support that specific concept, but we do need to have a major reform in our state funding of education. We are a state that has an ineffective, inefficient, and bureaucratic, and murky funding formula. I think it's broken. It doesn't work. What we should do is study how some of the best-run states around America fund their education and compare and contrast what we do with them and steal their best ideas. Education is the single most important thing we do together collectively as a community. We need to invest in it aggressively, but we need to hold our schools accountable for results. Today, Pat Quinn and the Democrats in Springfield are failing us because they are cutting state support for education. That's wrong. Education should be the top priority when we spend taxpayer dollars, and we should not only invest properly, but hold our schools accountable. There's nothing more important that we do than education. That's our future. That's our competitiveness. That's the income level for our young people, and that's how we really raise wages, is through education and vocational training. I'll make education reform, both of its funding formula as well as the results we expect, my top priority as governor. We need world-class vocational training, educational training, technical training throughout the state in every school district, and treat every student the same. Every student deserves a real opportunity at the American dream. I'll make that a top priority.
Mr. Rutherford.
Thank you very much. Jacory, your question is one that's been perennial in Springfield, particularly when you talk on the issue on property taxes. And for those of us that are from a more rural area, you see them continuing to drive up and our schools and the funding levels become more challenged. Direct to your question was, would I support the concept of allowing for a shift from income tax into allowing a local sales tax, correct?
If that was
the question, then I, as governor, would be willing to look at that if it was a local decision and the local district, whether it be county or school district, were the ones to help make that decision.
Mr. Brady.
Well, there's no question, as I travel around the state, businesses that want to employ people struggle with finding an educated worker to take the job. If we're going to grow jobs in the state, we've got to understand we've got to prioritize education. And funding needs to be fair. Recently, we completed a study that showed that the Chicago Public School District was getting nearly a $1 billion windfall over and above what the rest of our school districts were getting throughout this state because of the gimmicks the Chicago politicians were playing. They've played games with our funding, costing our taxpayers dollars, costing our students classroom opportunities. As governor, I'm going to equalize that funding. We also need to bring efficiencies. There's another way to help school funding, and that's by cutting bureaucracy and red tape, which is why I go back to eliminating the State Board of Education, creating a department under the governor that will let local parents and school boards make decisions about what best meets the needs of their children. We have a very diverse state, from Chicago to Cairo, Illinois. Each area is different in its needs. I also want to use the community colleges to provide greater opportunities in our program. But the truth of the matter is, we're never going to have enough money for funding education until we rebuild Illinois' economy. We've got to have a governor who focuses like a laser on bringing jobs back to this state. 100,000 jobs brings a bottom line effect to the budget of over $1 billion. 400,000 over $4 billion. Those are the ways we're going to raise revenues to better fund education, reduce the property tax burden, and give our students a much better and greater opportunity.
And Mr. Dillard.
Well, it begins with priorities. And I will tell you the Democrats who have controlled the General Assembly's priority has not been education. It's been to expand the general government of Illinois, especially some types of public assistance and welfare. The foundation level of school funding in this state is way, way below what a panel recommends it needs to be. Senator Brady pointed out that under the current crop of characters who control Springfield, mostly from the city of Chicago, at least that leadership, they have moved systematically nearly $1 billion of school funding from the general state aid formula. And they've played with factors called poverty weighting factors. They think a child that is poor in my area is only worth a fraction of what a poor child is in Chicago. But if you're going to bed hungry at night, whether you're in Chillicothe or Clarendon Hills or Chicago, you know, that poverty child faces the same kinds of problems. And I represent an area, and down here you have high property taxes. You know, they've weighted a property tax factor, and almost 90% of that money goes to the city of Chicago. For too long, this state has been controlled by one city, and it doesn't bode well for school funding. And the best way to close that gap between the haves and the have-nots is for the state to do its share on education.
That concludes the first round of questioning. We'll continue with the second round of questioning in just a moment, but I saw some note-taking, so I'm going to offer another opportunity for clarification. I know you passed last time, Mr. Rutherford, but I'll allow you one more chance for clarification.
I'm willing to pass.
And Mr. Brady?
Well, let me further clarify my policies on education. One of the reasons I want to eliminate the state board is because there's always been finger-pointing. Governors blame the state board votes, blames the governors and the legislature. The governor's the chief elected officer in the state of Illinois. He or she needs to be responsible for our children's education and their future. As governor, I'll create a smaller department that'll save money, cut bureaucratic red tape, reduce mandates so school districts can do more of what they do best, teach children. I also want to empower regional office of education and our community colleges to change what we teach. We need to be able to bring an associate's degree into high schools, and we need to be able to bring vocational education into high schools. Our workforce is developing. We need to meet the demands of the workforce. Not every student is destined to go to a four-year college. Some of them want to learn a career, use that to build wealth and raise a family. That's the kind of educational opportunities I want to see our children have in this state.
Mr. Dillard.
Just a couple more clarifications to the education question. I'm working with Representative Chad Hayes from Eastern Illinois to have a focus, and this is a downstate public television debate, a focus on helping rural schools who are really having some struggles, especially with respect to school construction. So that is one way the state can help close that gap. We also clearly need to have a top-to-bottom overhaul of our state funding situation for schools. And again, that is something that I think if you had geographic balance controlling Springfield, you would close that gap.
Mr. Rauner.
In Illinois, we are suffering from brutally high unemployment, but we're also suffering because thousands of jobs are going unfilled inside Illinois employers. And that is caused by failure in our school system. We are not equipping our young people with the skills to fill the jobs available in today's economy. It's a tragic failure. We've got to turn that around. One of the priorities I'll make as governor is to bring together employers in Illinois with the local high schools, with local community colleges to customize curriculum, change curriculum so we can have vocational training, technical training back in our schools again like we used to do 40 years ago, 50 years ago. So our young people are ready to work and have rising incomes and real opportunity in Illinois. That combined with what my wife and I have done for years fighting for charter schools to provide competitive alternatives for failing schools, to have merit pay so teachers can make more money if they're highly successful, but eliminating tenure for ineffective teachers so our children aren't locked into failing schools.
And we begin our second round with a question from Jack Titchener of WSIU. The answers to these questions are 60 seconds in length, and we will start with Mr. Brady.
The Illinois General Assembly recently passed what its supporters said was one of the toughest packages of laws and regulations dealing with hydraulic fracturing technology, or fracking as it's commonly called, to free up more of the state's oil and natural gas resources. The Illinois Department of Natural Resources recently held hearings on the rules that they're drawing up to govern fracking, and the public response has been overwhelmingly negative, especially in light of the recent chemical spill in West Virginia where over 300,000 people couldn't drink the water or bathe in it. Based on the regulations as they're currently written, would you feel comfortable with drinking Southern Illinois tap water, much less your children or grandchildren, or would you support a moratorium on fracking until you're absolutely sure it can be done safely?
I supported the fracking legislation. It was negotiated for a number of years. The Sierra Club and other groups were involved in those negotiations. And at the end of the day, I think we passed a good law. Now, there is truth in the fact. It's up to the administration and the rulemaking process on how that's going to be implemented. I hope it's implemented expeditiously. And, yes, I would be happy to drink water in Southern Illinois based on those rules. Let's think at the opportunity, though, that's here as well. After we've passed safe rules and law, I think we've got a great opportunity to develop the bottom third of the state. For years, I've said that we have more coal in Southern Illinois than Saudi Arabia has oil. Now we're finding we have even greater resources. We could become a self-sufficient energy state. We need to make sure that we take advantage of the economic opportunities that are there through fracking, and that we leverage those to reestablish our manufacturing presence in the state, providing even more jobs. But we must continue with caution. We have to make sure that we haven't made mistakes. And as governor of this state, I'll make sure that we do that.
Mr. Dillard.
I drink that water. Fracking has been taking place throughout this country for a long time, longer than most people realize. The Sierra Club, I believe, Jack, signed off on the legislation, and they would not do so if they didn't think that it was safe. The economy of southeastern Illinois is not the only place that will become, hopefully, like the Dakotas, which have seen a great boom in oil and gas exploration. There are other parts of Illinois, including LaSalle, Peru, and Morris, and that area, that will greatly benefit by providing the sand that is used in fracking. So I'm confident that the Sierra Club has signed off on this. It will be done well, and it is economic hope for Illinois. It's a bright spot for the future economically of the land of Lincoln.
Mr. Rauner.
I strongly believe that we have a unique opportunity in Illinois to develop our energy resources. It's one of the most important strategic assets we have as a state. It can lead to major economic growth, major job creation, major new sources of tax revenue. We should be aggressive in developing our energy resources, but we should be thoughtful, careful too, but we should develop our energy resources. It's been done around the nation, as Kirk mentioned earlier. It can be done safely and properly, and we should not hold back waiting for years to see every possible outcome. We know that it can work. It's worked in other parts of the nation. It can work in Illinois, and there's a huge economic opportunity for us here. And what I will do as governor of the state is to look strategically at all our opportunities. Energy is a big one. Our agriculture industry has huge opportunities that I will advance as governor. We've lost much of our manufacturing base, but I will work hard to bring manufacturing back to Illinois and really drive economic growth as my top priority.
Mr. Rutherford.
You know, I think, Jack, direct to your question, though, those rules have not been put into the administrative code yet. They are still going through the Joint Committee on Administrative Rules. And my background, having worked on that committee for so many years, I understand the process. The opposition is a part of what you need to deal with when you're dealing in leadership. People are not going to be for everything out there. I intend, as a governor, if an issue like this came before me, to be sure that my agency, per the director who I appoint, promulgates rules that are fairly understood, and an issue like this are very abundantly responsive to the fact that we want to have everyone in Southern Illinois be very, very comfortable and sensitive and free to have that drink of water. Yes, I've enjoyed a glass of water in Southern Illinois. I've been campaigning down there for years, going back down there again, and as governor of Illinois, I plan to continue to drink Southern Illinois water.
We just concluded a sequence of first answers moving from right to left. We will now return to the left to right format. So, Mr. Brady, you will answer first to a question from Jim Meadows.
Senator Brady, if elected governor, you'll be in charge of a medical marijuana pilot program in the state. Illinois' medical marijuana law assigns the task of registering and regulating marijuana cultivation centers to the State Department of Agriculture, which has lost somewhere around half of its staff in the last few years and may face more cuts in the future. As governor, how will you make sure medical marijuana is handled responsibly in Illinois, especially considering the limitations created by the state's budget problems?
Well, first of all, let me state that I didn't support the medical marijuana legislation. Although I have great passion and compassion for the people who came to me lobbying for it, at the end of the day, I had to listen to the experts, police officers and doctors, when it came to this law. And by and large, most of them said we shouldn't do this in Illinois, and regulating it will be a difficulty. It should be regulated by the Federal Drug Administration. We are inconsistent with federal laws, and frankly, I question how legally members of the Illinois General Assembly under the U.S. Constitution and the Illinois Constitution could support the legislation. But as governor, we'll have to use the resources to make sure that we police it properly. Hopefully there will be enough regulatory fees involved in the process that we can make that done. If we can't, we'll have to go back to the legislature for more resources, but we have to make sure it's done in the most efficient, effective, and legal way. But I will admit, this law puts a great burden on the state of Illinois when it comes to the regulatory effects of something as difficult as marijuana.
Mr. Ruthford.
Great. You know, Jim, your question actually begs a larger answer, if I may. The whole concept of licensing and then the fees collected, my belief as your governor is those fees collected should be enough to administer that program. So under a medical marijuana program, fees are collected. That should be what pays for the regulatory oversight of it, not to come out of general revenue, which will affect schools and corrections and so forth. Also with that is the fact of funds sweeps, which is a concept that the General Assembly and governors have used in the past, that you raise the fee on the barber, or the beautician, or for that matter, the licensing of a nursing home, and oh my, there's too much money there. Let's sweep it out and go use it for general spending, as opposed to putting into place additional necessary regulators to monitor that program that's being licensed. If for some reason there's more money in there than what's needed for the regulatory part of it, lower the fee. Don't sweep it, go use it for something else. That's the same plan I would intend to use as governor with regards to the medical marijuana program.
Mr. Rauner.
Jim, to me, this medical marijuana discussion is just so symptomatic of the fundamental failure of our state government. I personally don't support medical marijuana use or legalizing marijuana, but it's a relatively minor issue. It's very controversial. We spend time in Springfield debating and issuing regulations around things like that while our state is failing, while our state is fundamentally in a death spiral. We have got to focus, set priorities. We have got to turn our state around. It takes work. It takes dedication. It takes focus and discipline. We can't be distracted by these other issues. We've got to focus on the spending in Springfield and reduce it. We've got to focus on our education system and increase its quality. We've got to fundamentally change our business climate and our business regulations so we can be pro-business, so we can be pro-job creation, which means pro-wage increases. The working people in our state are suffering because of our lack of focus and discipline. Our jobs are leaving. We are neck and neck with New Jersey on out-migration every year. We got to turn that around and stop being distracted.
Mr. Dillard.
Thank you. Jim, I didn't vote for the medical marijuana law. I listened to law enforcement on that issue. I agree with both the treasurer and Mr. Rauner. This is a bigger symptomatic problem. I've always believed that medical marijuana and some of these other issues are diversions from focusing us on what we really need to focus on making us, again, what I call a destination economy for people that create jobs in the state of Illinois. The capital of Illinois is Springfield. It's not Chicago. And there's, the treasurer pointed out, there is a bigger problem in state government with respect to how fast things get through the regulatory process. Our department's agriculture just had dinner the other day with Secretary Jack Block, a former secretary, been decimated, DNR. The capital of Illinois has been systematically moved to Chicago, and these agencies have been decimated. So the capital must return to be Springfield. And then last but not least, we need to regulate business, not talking medical marijuana. We need to regulate businesses at the speed of businesses, not at the speed of government. And state government's a mess, and it must be prioritized and run right again.
It's time to stop for another clarification round, and as the sequence calls for it, Dan Rutherford is the first to respond during the clarification.
My goodness. Well, medical marijuana, let me just say up front, I didn't support the legislation. I didn't have the opportunity to take a vote on it, didn't support it. Question that's typically asked then a little later on is, what do you think about supporting marijuana? I don't support doing that either. And while I've got this extra 5 or 6 seconds, I might as well just tell you, when you're looking at, I told you about before, fees, if you got yourself a beautician and you don't have enough folks able to go out there and license for, you either put those people into place or you lower that beautician's license fee. It's very simple. Don't go taking fees and sweeping it out for general spending. That affects that beautician and affects the resident in a nursing home. We've seen this happen in the past. As governor, I don't support it.
And 30 seconds for clarification to Mr. Rauner.
You know, I'll come back to the issue of focus. One of the things we've got to focus on is the conflicts of interest and the self-dealing and corruption in Springfield. It's bad. It's out of control. Many of you will remember our wonderful U.S. Senator Everett Dirksen. He had a famous line about corruption in Springfield. He said, "Cleanliness is next to godliness, except in the Illinois legislature, where it's next to impossible." We need to transform our government so it's responsive. We need to put term limits on every state legislature so that they serve 8 years maximum and then leave office as public servants again.
Mr. Dillard.
I'll pass.
And 30 seconds to Mr. Brady.
Well, to follow up on what Mr. Rauner said, there's no question that we need to end the pay-to-play political style of Illinois. We need to end the corruption in this state. We need to end clouding. We need someone who can rise above that as governor. We need someone who can distance himself from the Chicago politicians and put the people of interest, of Illinois' interest, in front of any personal interest anybody may have.
Amanda Vinicky will ask the next question, and it will be directed first to Mr. Rauner. A 60-second response, if you would, please.
All right, fellas. We're going to have an imaginary world here, and you don't get to pick anything you want, so you can't magically make Illinois' budget wonderful, bring in jobs, make journalists' pesky questions disappear, but you get two very defined wishes, one of which that you could repeal any law that's on Illinois' books right now. So what law would you do away with and why? And then your second wish, at the snap of fingers, you get to have a new law in place. What would that be and why?
Okay. Well, let me say that we have so many bad laws in Illinois. It's a tough thing to choose among. The one thing I'll do as governor, I'll meet with the legislature day one, and I'd like to have an understanding. I'd like to ask them, don't pass a law and send it to my desk with a new regulation in it unless we also send the repeal of three laws. Let's do a three-for-one. Let's reduce, take away three regulations for every new regulation we put in place. I'm going to try to have that understanding and try to stick to it as we go forward, because Illinois is an over-regulated, overtaxed, and overfeed state. In terms of what would I like to put in place, you know what? I'd like to see us fundamentally encourage and embrace education as our number one priority, and put in a fundamentally different education funding formula that embraces equality for all the students in this state and makes education our top priority for dollars rather than at the bottom of the spending barrel.
Thank you.
Mr. Dillard.
Thank you. My running mate, Representative Jill Tracy from Quincy, and her family operate something known as Dot Foods. They employ 2,000 Illinoisans in tiny Mount Sterling, Illinois, 4,000 throughout the United States of America. I've said throughout this campaign, in addition to being the lieutenant governor, Jill Tracy is going to be known as the repealer, Amanda, in state government. She's going to go throughout this state talking to businesses, small and large, and farmers and families about what laws are stifling economic development in this state. We are overregulated. We don't regulate at the speed of business. We regulate at the speed of government, whether it's medical marijuana laws or, more importantly, laws that affect Caterpillar Tractor here in the Peoria area and throughout Illinois, a great Illinois employer. I will also, if you want one change, if I could have my way, we need a causation or an apportionment factor. If you want to talk about helping Caterpillar, Illinois is one of the only Midwestern states, the only one, that doesn't require you to show that the workplace injury was caused at work. And our workers' compensation costs are 3 to 7 times higher for companies like Caterpillar or small manufacturers than they are in any other state. We got to get back our competitive edge and competitive advantage in Illinois.
Mr. Brady.
Well, I'd repeal the 67% income tax increase that the Democrats imposed on the families and businesses of Illinois. Why, though, is the real answer. Because it's damaged our economic opportunity. We need a governor who's going to put our economy first, jobs number one. The truth of the matter is we'll never work our way out of this problem unless we do that. That sends a strong message to the business community and to the families. Taking 1 week's pay out of the family's pocket was harmful and hurtful. Eliminating a business's opportunity to reinvest in their business hurt jobs. That's the thing I do. If I had one law I could pass, I think it might go along You know, the Illinois legislature meets every year for about 70 days. I think the Texas legislature meets about every other year for 7 days. That might be a good idea.
You put me out of work.
Sorry. I bet you'll find something to write about.
Am I up?
And Mr. Rutherford.
Okay, fine. Knowing the process, I'd use my amendatory veto. So the repeal would be to recraft a workers' compensation statute that would be conducive to be friendly for business. So the repeal part would be an amendatory veto, a mandatory repeal, and because it's an imaginary world. The other part about which new law would I have, I would take and put in the basket the current laws that are dealing with Medicaid and put into effect a new law that would actually put together this comprehensive reform dealing with the issues of fraud and eligibility to put that as a new law onto the books.
Mm-hmm. Our next question comes from Shakur Cope and is directed first to Mr. Dillard.
Why should an undecided voter take a GOP ballot or vote Republican? Are any of you moderate enough to win in a general election? How can you prove that?
Well, I say anyone who's a Democrat or an independent this time, it's in your interest to have a two-party system. This state works best when there's a two-party system, and we need geographic balance, and we certainly do not need control, total control, by one county or one city. I have been described by Governors Edgar and Thompson as the one candidate that can actually beat Pat Quinn, and that is the goal of the Republican Party. I believe I'm highly electable. Last time, all the pundits of the state said, had I been our nominee, I came within 193 votes of my friend and colleague Bill Brady. Most of the pundits have said I would have beaten Pat Quinn. So I'm electable. I'm a suburbanite with very strong downstate roots. That's the right template for a Republican to win the election. Jill Tracy, whom I've described before, a Southern Illinoian and businesswoman, is just icing on the cake. I will win the election.
Mr. Brady.
Well, I don't care if you're a Democrat, independent, or moderate. You can't be happy with the highest unemployment rate practically in the nation, greatest net out-migration, people leaving more than are coming in, high tax rates, and low job performance. We need a governor who focuses like a laser on economic opportunity in Illinois. I've said it once. I'll say it 100 times tonight. As governor, that's what I'll focus on. That's what appeals to independents, Democrats, and Republicans. You know, we're here today because we want our children to raise their children in this state. And the only way we can guarantee that to happen is to give them economic opportunity. As far as electability, I'm the only one up here who's run for governor against Pat Quinn. Yeah, I lost by a few thousand votes, but I went from 150,000 votes in a primary to nearly 1.8 million votes in a general. I'm the only guy, I think, who can build on that foundation and defeat Pat Quinn in a state that's dominantly Democrat. I've done it. We'll finish the job this time.
Mr. Rutherford.
Shakur, to your question, why would a Democrat pull a ballot in the Republican primary? I'd look him in the eye and say, well, you got a supermajority Democrat in the House, supermajority in the Senate, you got a Democrat governor, how's it going? That's number one. An alternative will be the Republican ballot. With regards to the template about a suburbanite and a downstate, well, I had the same template, just a little bit different. I happen to be a downstater with my career in the suburban area. I'm the only Republican right here on this stage that's won a statewide race. In a Democrat state, when every constitutional officer is a Democrat from the city of Chicago. When I ran, I got that 22% of the city of Chicago, not 18%. You need 20 to win. I got 66,000 more votes than Pat Quinn got, with 83,000 less people voting the office of treasurer. It's a different race. I totally get it. But I got 50% of the vote with four people on the ballot. Pat Quinn didn't even get that. I'm a reasonable Republican. I think that's the difference. I am not a Republican with horns and a tail. That some of our party across this country have made it difficult to represent what we can really do to change Illinois.
Mr. Rauner.
I am excited to win this race precisely because I'm a unique candidate. And our message, more jobs, value for taxpayers, great schools, and term limits, that's a unifying message that all voters respond to. And as I've traveled the state, I've put 40,000 miles on the Ford between March and December. We're traveling, we've had hundreds of public events, shaking hands with folks everywhere. They respond to this message. I've had voters come up to me and say, Bruce, I normally vote Democratic, or I'm an independent voter. I don't vote Republican often. I love your message. We're going to be with you this time. You're unique. You drive results. We need more jobs. We need better schools. You've lived that through your career. We're going to be with you. I've got African-American support. Many of the African-American ministers in Chicago and Rockford are helping. We have Latino leaders helping our campaign. We have a unifying, powerful message. We're going to win this race. Quinn's the worst governor in America. He's got the track record to prove it. I'm going to make sure the voters know it every week this year, and we're going to get him out of office, and we're going to turn our state around.
We're going to give you another opportunity to clarify anything that you've already addressed, and we'll allow you up to 30 seconds, starting with Mr. Brady.
Well, again, let me talk about electability. I know Treasurer Rutherford won his race, and there's no one happier that he ran, that he won, than I am. In fact, I'd rather he stayed in that office. But he didn't run for governor, the highest office in this state. I had $5 million in negative ads thrown against me. I proved that I earned the support of 1.8 million voters nearly. I can build on that, make sure we defeat Pat Quinn, and put our vision into place for the people of Illinois.
Mr. Rutherford.
Well, I intend to be the governor of Illinois, not the state treasurer. In 40 years, before I got elected, only three Republicans had ever won the office of comptroller or treasurer. It's an office down ballot that the minority party doesn't win. George Lindbergh, Lolita Diedrichsen, and Judy Bartopinka. It was a seat that I wasn't supposed to win, and I did. And statistically, far more than Pat Quinn. Much greater percentage.
Mr. Romney.
I'm so excited to turn our state around. I am the solution for our problems, and I know how to implement it. I'm a unique candidate. I'm the only person in this race, the only one who hasn't been in Springfield for decades, voting for bigger budgets, more debt, bad pension deals, budgets that raise taxes and fees. I am not the problem. Everyone I'm running against has been there, part of the problem for decades. I'm going to come in with fresh ideas, new leadership, fundamentally transform state government. I'm excited to deliver real results.
And Mr. Dillard.
A couple points to that, Bruce. I've never voted for a general tax increase, and I haven't voted for these Democrat budgets in years. They're out of balance, and their priorities are certainly not mine. As to electability, with all due respect to my friend the treasurer, Judy Bartopinka ran over 100,000 votes better than he did. And my point is that if you want to have your best chance of winning the election, you have to come from the suburbs and be someone who has very strong downstate roots, like my running mate, my wife, and I do. And then last but not least, to electability. I've said it, and I said it this week to the papers, the drip, 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 drip of stories day in and day out about Mr. Rauner's business dealings and his history of pay-to-play activity will wash away our chances as a party to ever get rid of Pat Quinn in November.
Our third round of questioning requires 30-second responses. It will begin with a question from Jack Titchener of WSIU, and it will be addressed first to Mr. Rutherford.
Mr. Rutherford, supporters of a bill to expand casino gaming in Illinois say the five new casinos and hundreds of slots at racetracks around the state could generate over $1 billion in one-time revenues from the sale of those licenses and over $250 million a year in general revenues on a yearly basis. Under what conditions would you sign a gaming expansion bill if it crossed your desk, or are you totally opposed to the idea?
I'd be open for discussion, and let's go right to the Chicago casino. I historically have not been supportive of it. The mayors of Chicago had not wanted it. But in today's world, I see that the mayor does. I would be willing to work with them to put together an appropriate package. But, and here's the important part, but it must have oversight, if it were to be there, by the state gaming board, not by a local Chicago oversight.
Mr. Rauner.
I don't gamble. I don't like gambling. But I also believe that voters should control their own destiny and make their own decisions. And I believe in local control for every possible decision. I believe that casinos and gambling is here. It's in our nation. It's in our state. It's in all the competing states around us. And we should allow our local governments, our local voters, to decide for themselves whether they would like more gambling or a casino in their particular community. And if so, we should allow that to occur.
Mr. Dillard.
I don't agree with Governor Quinn on much, but I do agree with him with respect to his edict, as he puts it, that Chicago's casino, if they get one, will be regulated the right way by the state of Illinois. It won't be regulated by the city of Chicago. Mayor Emanuel is always quick to point out Chicago does have casino gambling. It just happens to be in Hammond, Indiana, and other places. And then last but not least, agriculture. Always is the forgotten child here in gambling legislation. There are many family farms that are dependent upon horse racing as an industry. Jobs that will be lost and cannot be easily replaced.
Mr. Brady.
I've never believed that gaming or expansion of gaming is going to solve Illinois' economic woes, and I've been also very concerned about the problems it creates. I didn't support the video poker, which I think is going to be one of the worst things that ever happened to our state. And when it comes to a Chicago casino, even though I've never supported the expansion of gaming, I would be adamantly opposed to anything that was owned by the city. When it comes to the horse racing industry, we have to realize that this is an important part of our economy. The expansion of gaming has adversely affected their livelihood, and we must come up with some sort of solution that balances its interest.
Jim Meadows will ask the next question. Please direct it first to Mr. Rauner.
Mr. Rauner, if you're elected governor, would you live, and I mean really live, in the governor's mansion? More to the point, do you think it's important for the governor to spend more time in Illinois' capital city than Governor Quinn and Blagojevich have done, especially considering Senator Dillard's remarks that so many government operations in the past few years have moved from Springfield to Chicago?
The clear, emphatic answer is I will absolutely in Springfield. I'm excited to do it. Not only to turn the government around, I happen to be an avid bird hunter, an avid Harley rider, and it's way better in the center of the state than it is up in the Northeast, so I'm looking forward to living there. You know, in business, we know to get something done, you don't wing in a phone call and make a threat every week or two. You're in there working with people, getting to know them on a first-name basis, cajoling, going out to dinner together, going out to a celebration together, get to know each other personally. And to get legislation done, I want to get to know every legislator on a first-name basis and work together to solve problems, get bills passed.
Mr. Dillard.
I would live in the governor's residence with a great deal of pride. My wife and I were married right up the road in a rural farming community of Elkhart in Logan County near Lincoln. As I explained earlier, the state government, if you want to be the CEO of the state government, you need to be in Springfield, just like the CEO of Caterpillar Tractor has to be in Peoria. It's necessary to be there every day to work and ride roughshod from time to time over a legislature that wants to spend you into oblivion. So to be an effective CEO of the state of Illinois, you've got to live in the governor's residence in Springfield, and the capital of Illinois is Springfield. It's not Chicago.
Mr. Brady.
Absolutely. Unlike Pat Quinn, I think it requires more than just keeping your underwear in the mansion, though. No, it's a serious thing. When I ran before and had a child who was in high school in Bloomington, Illinois, I said not only will we move, but we'll put our children in Springfield schools. That's how you determine whether you live there. But the governor needs to be there. The governor needs to be on the job, needs to get the job done. You can't do it by shuttling your way back and forth from Chicago to Springfield. You can't do it like Governor Blagojevich when your children are going to school in Chicago. You need to make a full commitment if you want this job.
Mr. Ruthford.
I will reside in the governor's mansion. I will use the mansion. And what I mean by that is when we have a company from out of the country looking to locate in Illinois, Indiana, or Wisconsin, I'm going to entertain them for dinner at the governor's mansion. When we have a small business that's been successful and has been a teacher that's done great, or we've got ourselves a young art student that's made some accomplishments, I'm going to use that facility with pride. But beyond that, I'm also going to be all over Illinois. You know, being in Springfield during the time of legislature is very, very important. But there's a lot more out of Illinois than just Springfield and Chicago.
Mr. Rauner, I believe we have time for a clarification round, and it will begin with Mr. Dillard.
Thank you.
Did we have an opportunity for everyone to answer? So, Mr. Dillard, please, with clarification.
Thank you. I agree with the treasurer. The governor of Illinois in the 21st century needs to be out and about. And as I've moved around this great state, I've said I want to take the Capitol. Dan and I worked for Governor Thompson. We used to have Capitol for a day. Well, I want more than just a day, and I plan to take on a regular basis my cabinet and state government to, you know, the Giant City State Lodge or any place else in state government that we can move around. We'll have days where the Capitol and the actual work of this state will be done in the Quad Cities or be done in Bloomington. So, yes, the Capitol is Springfield, the governor's residence is there, but you do have to move around, as the treasurer said.
Clarification to Mr. Brady.
Well, once I put this state on solid financial footing as governor, and we put the workplace reforms in that will help bring about effective opportunities for businesses with an educated workforce and in the culture of corruption, I'm going to be the chief marketing officer for Illinois. We've got to have someone who will travel out of the state, in the state, to make sure that we're leveraging the opportunities that we have to offer capital investment in our state to create jobs for our citizens. So there's no question, my number one job and my lieutenant governor's number one job, Maria Rodriguez, will be to bring businesses to Illinois and keep businesses in Illinois.
Mr. Rutherford.
You know, I can show by example as the treasurer of Illinois about whether you have your operations in Chicago or Springfield. Unlike my predecessor, my chief of staff lives and operates out of the state capitol in Springfield. My two deputy chiefs of staff live and operate out of the state capitol in Springfield. My legal counsel out of Springfield. And then again, my directors of most of my agencies are out of Springfield. We do have the staff that we need to have in Chicago. It's the largest city in the entire state. But I understand what it means to have the capitol in Springfield. It isn't just where I'm going to be living. It's where you operate your base of government.
Mr. Rauner.
We have so many challenges in Illinois, so many problems, that it's going to take real expertise and creative thinking to solve the problems. Once we come up with solutions, then we've got to sell and cajole and push with the legislature and have creative, aggressive, tough negotiations. I'm excited to lead that process. We need a leader who's not afraid to upset the apple cart, not afraid to stand up to the special interest groups that control Springfield today and make money from the government. They control the politicians. I can stand up to them. I'll battle them. I'll solve problems and then deliver results through tough negotiations to turn our state around.
Amanda Vinicky, please address your next question to Mr. Rauner.
All right. And so I actually tossed the question I was going to ask because I've heard from so many of you about Medicaid cuts. And this comes after, of course, the Illinois General Assembly recently passed the SMART Act. And we've already seen some reversals of that because we saw how painful some of those cuts were. So could you please specify how you would cut Medicaid, what you would do to find savings there? At what point do cuts do go too far on very vulnerable individuals?
Medicaid is a critical, important service we provide to our neediest citizens. I believe it should be protected, and we keep a good, firm social services safety net for our neediest citizens. It's got to be protected. But today, we have a system that serves people who aren't entitled to receive benefits in it. It's wrong, it's corrupt, it's broken, and we've got to turn it around. I will bring experts in Medicaid from around Illinois, but also from around the United States. There is deep expertise on Medicaid. Other states run their Medicaid systems very well. And I will go to those states, steal their best people, steal their best ideas, bring them to Springfield to bring expertise to turn it around.
We're moving from right to left, so we next go to Mr. Rutherford.
You know, I think it's important for our viewers to understand that Medicaid is not just the concept or thought of poor people, right? Medicaids are grandma and grandpas who've depleted their assets that are in a nursing home. They're not poor people. They've gone through their assets. And the most important thing I can do as our governor, and with regards to the cuts you're talking about, is making sure that only the eligible people, like the grandmas and grandpas that have gone through their assets, are receiving our state's Medicaid.
Mr. Brady.
It's a serious problem. We spend over $17 billion a year. We need to do everything we can to preserve and protect the system so that the people who are entitled get it. That means verifying that you're actually entitled, that you don't have private insurance, which we know goes on, that you're really a resident of the state, that you really aren't making enough money to provide for yourself. That's how we'll protect the system for those people who are entitled. But we also need to realize that the only way we're really going to solve this crisis is to put people back to work, real career-oriented jobs, focus on jobs so they can get off Medicaid and provide for themselves. The average Medicaid recipient costs the state of Illinois $6,300 a year. That's real money. We need to give them a better livelihood.
And Mr. Dillard.
Thank you. I've managed the Medicaid system of this state before. The New York Times, not exactly a conservative paper, estimates that 10% of all Medicaid is fraud. And sometimes people throw in there, boy, can you imagine what it's like in a state like Illinois? I've got to determine who's eligible and who's not. We have tens of thousands of people that aren't eligible so that a single mom or a senior citizen gets better care. We spend more per capita, at least in a recent study, than any other state in America on Medicaid, which shows it's not being managed very well. And then last but not least, we need innovative ideas, which we have an entire portfolio of to roll out to manage the Medicaid system better.
Amanda, did you want to follow up quickly?
I just wanted to see if anybody had an example of one of those innovative ideas. Each of you seemed to touch on going through the Medicaid rolls to make sure that anybody who's ineligible would not continue to receive that assistance. But that's something that Illinois is already in the process of doing. And so I just wanted to see if anybody had a follow-up into something additional that they would do in that regard.
Mr. Brady first and down the line.
We need to do more to provide managed care. And I think medical savings accounts can work here to motivate the Medicaid recipients, put the money into a savings account, let them draw down against that so they can actually save money, waste less. It works in the private sector. It's a concept we need to leverage in this Medicaid system in Illinois.
A quick response from Mr. Ruthven.
Actually, I would concur quite considerably with Senator Brady on that.
And Mr. Rauner?
Yes, I do agree. But we've got to make our Medicaid system more transparent. Today, you said there's a study going on to check enrollment, but that's being blocked by the very government union bosses that were responsible for the old system that was causing the corruption. We need independent verification. We need outside experts to come in because the government union bosses that make their money from the system are blocking the studies and are taking the system back. It's broken and it's corrupt.
And Mr. Dillard.
Amanda, I've always thought, as the leader of this state, I want one person on my staff whose sole job is to make sure that no one who is ineligible for Medicaid or any welfare program gets on welfare in Illinois. But again, you need innovation, and I've been there and done it, including setting up a system that most of the states followed called the Hospital Assessment Program. During the administration that I ran, that brought billions of more federal dollars to Illinois, and every other state in the country followed it. You've got to be innovative, but you've got to be tough.
Shakur Cope has our final question of the evening. We'll start with Mr. Rutherford, moving right to left.
Okay. The state funds Amtrak routes throughout Illinois. Do you support continued funding of operations for Amtrak? Would you increase it, decrease it, or eliminate it?
Boy, you hit a nerve with me, young man. I represented the largest section of Amtrak in the Illinois General Assembly, and I have real opinions about that. When the appropriation for Amtrak came up a number of years ago, I voted against it, and specifically because there's too many times when you're in Springfield, Illinois, Bloomington, Illinois, Pontiac, Illinois, or Dwight, Illinois, and you're sitting there in a cold gravel parking lot waiting for a train that's 4 hours late. Until they can get those trains to run on time, I don't see having any good government money going to it without a great deal of accountability.
Mr. Brady.
I'm a big supporter of Amtrak. I think it's an important and vital part of our transportation system. I've worked for years to make it a better system, and I think we're making some inroads with the recent federal dollars that we've invested to make the track better. It not only helps passenger rail, but it helps commercial rail, which is a vital economic engine in our state. I'm also a supporter of the idea of an education corridor. If we're going to expand economic opportunities beyond just the current Amtrak routes and we think about the 74 corridor and how we start, that doesn't mean we build it tomorrow, but it means we begin with transportation sections that can further expand educational opportunities from the Quad Cities to Indianapolis.
Let's go to Mr. Dillard next.
Thank you. Generally, I have supported Amtrak. It is the lifeblood to places like Macomb, Quincy, Galesburg, Champaign, and Carbondale. But I do agree with Treasurer Rutherford. If the trains aren't running on time, we shouldn't be pouring more money into it, especially if it means faster rail. But if the trains don't get there, it doesn't mean that they need to run faster. So, yes, Amtrak's vital, but it needs to perform better.
And Mr. Rauner.
You know, the rail system is obviously a part of a broader picture here in Illinois of our transportation infrastructure. To me, our infrastructure is one of the most important priorities we can set to enhance our economy and get our economy growing again, creating jobs for everyone. And it's the rail system, it's our locks and dams, it's our canals, it's our highways. We need to invest aggressively in our infrastructure, with it being top priority, with tax money not diverted for other uses. But to the degree we don't have the money to invest, we should form creative public-private partnerships to help finance investments in our infrastructure so it's world-class and help us our economic growth.
It's time now for closing statements from our four candidates for the Republican nomination for governor, and we're going to ask them to keep it as close as possible to 60 seconds so we can hit the bottom of the hour about on time. We're going to start right to left with Mr. Dillard.
Thank you. This is a great way to spend a cold evening. I can guarantee you that all four of us up here agree on one thing, and that's that Pat Quinn needs to go, and that for too long this state's been controlled by one party and one city. We need to restore the political balance of Illinois. If you're a Democrat or an independent, there's no action coming up on your side of the ballot on March 18th. Come on over to ours and save your state. We need to return the competitive advantage to Illinois. We're the capital of the Midwest. I want Illinois to be an entrepreneurial, not a social welfare haven. So I ask you for your vote tonight. Jill Tracy and I also want you to get committed. We can't do it alone. But together, Kirk Dillard and Jill Tracy provide the best geographic balance. We are tested and prepared. There is no time to spare, and being the governor is not an entry-level position. So I ask for your vote. I ask for your help. Let's make Illinois work again. Thank you very much.
And a closing statement from Mr. Rauner.
I am so excited to go to work for all of you and all the people of our great state. You know, we were a great state. We were proud once. We can do it again. We have not passed the point of no return, but we are coming dangerously close. We can't just nibble around the edges. We need major transformation. I'm the person who's going to get it done. I'm not out looking for a political career. I don't need a job. I can't be bought, intimidated, bribed, influenced. I can just stand up and fight for taxpayers, school children, homeowners, small business owners again. So, and help the working families of this state who are suffering from brutally high unemployment. You know, the sad fact is, in Illinois, the special interest groups that make their money from government, the government union bosses, the trial lawyers and others, they've bought the politicians in Springfield. They've bought the Democrats, and unfortunately, many of the Republicans, too. I'll stand up to them. I'll fight for what's right. I'll use the power of the governor's office to transform our state government, just the way Mitch Daniels did, using executive order to take on the government union bosses in Indiana. I'll do that here. That will set the stage for a transformation to restore the greatness of Illinois.
Mr. Rutherford.
You know, I don't need it for a job. I can't be bribed, and I can't be intimidated either. But then I want to also talk a little bit about my Lieutenant Governor Steve Kim. Second-generation Korean-American. He came here with his mom and dad. He's seen the American dream. He's going to be a guy that's going to work hard for the diversity of the state of Illinois. I've been a citizen legislator. I don't have to have training wheels when I get to Springfield. I know the folks down there. I know the process, including the complicated ones, Jack, in regards to administrative code. I know that. I don't need that. I'm a citizen legislator. I know how to do it. I'm a business guy. I've opened businesses where the minority of the people there are white. I've opened businesses in countries where Christianity was the minority. The diversity and the complexity of the mosaic of the state of Illinois will get a good guy that understands that when they get Rutherford as governor. I'm a reasonable Republican. That's why I win. A Republican that can win in this not blue but dark purple state and been able to do it in Chicago, the suburbs, and downstate, I want your vote to be the Republican nominee for governor.
And Mr. Brady.
Well, when I'm nominated with Maria Rodriguez as lieutenant governor and then on to win the general election, it'll be the best job we've ever had because the people of Illinois will have given us the opportunity to lead this state into the future. For too many years, we've seen decline and neglect. We need a governor who has a business background and legislative experience, who can work with the legislature and the people of Illinois to rebuild this state. We've laid out a platform, solidifying our fiscal condition, creating workplace reforms, educational opportunity for our students, and ending the culture of corruption and pay-to-play politics. When we get that job done, that's the vision that people in Illinois want. I'm also the only candidate up here that's already been invested in. We received over 1.7 million votes in the last election. We won 98 of 102 counties. We need to finish the job we started 4 years ago and win all 102 counties and move this state forward for our children and our grandchildren.
Thank you. That concludes the debate portion of tonight's program. We'll reconvene in just 2 minutes for an analysis with our panelists. Let me first say thank you to the League of Women Voters and to the PBS and NPR affiliates who have carried the debate tonight. We'll reconvene in 2 minutes, but first, please say thank you to the four candidates for the Republican nomination for governor of Illinois.
Big D, you too.
See you, William.
For support for the Illinois Republican gubernatorial candidate debate on this public station is provided in part by Eric Bussell, Mark Ballard, and Tom Burns. Thank you.
Public television is your front row seat when Illinois Governor Pat Quinn delivers his annual State of the State message to a joint session of the Illinois General Assembly on Wednesday, January 29th at 12 noon.
I'm Jack Titchener in Springfield. Watch Illinois lawmakers for live coverage of the Governor's State of the State message here on your Illinois public television station.
A new law allows Illinoisans who are 17 years old to vote in the primary election if they turn 18 on or before the following general election and are registered to vote. We encourage all eligible voters to cast ballots in the March 18th primary.
Across the state of Illinois, teachers are using PBS Learning Media as an engaging new teaching tool.
PBS Learning Media is a useful tool, not just for teachers or future teachers, but for parents and anyone who may interact with children, because if the PBS shows are the shows that your kids are watching, the resources available on PBS Learning Media already tie into those and provide kind of an intrinsic interest to your kids or those you might be working with.
The homeschool connection is there, and it is easy to use, and it is something that would make homework and any kind of work at home more fun and engaging. It's not just paper and pencil, sit at the table. Teachers can actually assign videos or clips or activities and games for parents to do, which it makes it very fun and meaningful at home.
We have moved to Studio B for the post-debate analysis. I'd like to introduce our panelists for this particular session, reintroducing Jack Titchener of WSIU in Carbondale. And seated next to him is a new addition to our panel, Chris Mooney. Chris is the director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois. Thank you for joining us.
Hi.
And across the table, we again have Jim Meadows from WILL in Champaign and Amanda Vinicky, who is the State House Bureau Chief for WUIS in Springfield. Thank you so much for joining us. Chris, I'd like to start with you. And you had a chance to sit in the audience and kind of take in the debate. What's your initial reaction?
Well, it was a very civil affair, I think, given some recent rumblings in the press. You know, one might have expected maybe a little bit more, especially when you've got the dynamic in this race where you've got Bruce Rauner, the tall one in the middle, the tall white guy in the middle, who is got more money than he knows what to do with, and relative to the other four, he is the only one that's really been on TV at all yet, and possibly there's only one other one that'll get on TV at this rate. And so there was an incentive for the other ones to come out and attack, and there has been some opportunities. But there wasn't much of that. There was a couple of comments, sort of side comments. I don't think the audience would have realized that. So it was very civil. Also, it points out what we see here is the difficulty in a primary debate. because they just all agree on so many things, right? And you know, they're all anti-Chicago. They're all, it's all about economy. It's all about jobs, right? And, you know, so finding the differentiation among them, which is what voters need to have to make a vote, wasn't there.
Amanda, the differentiation, was there any?
I mean, you know, and here's the thing. They had the opportunity. This mm-hmm. debate, a lot of times you don't necessarily have the chance to respond to a criticism. So somebody may, you know, throw out some sort of attack on a candidate, and then there's, and it's not really fair. At this point in time, they had sections built in where, you know, you could answer the question, and you still had time to go on the Bruce Rauner attack, and none of the candidates really took the opportunity to do that. And yeah. In fact, you even saw Treasurer Rutherford bypass it. He's trying to set himself apart, I think, by not attacking at all, and that may be a strategy for which he will get credit. That said, it is going to be very difficult at this point in time, as you said, because of all of the paid media that Bruce Rauner has had, and in general, the paid media campaign that he's focused on. He's doing this debate, and that was a switch from his initial position. He, you know, agreed to do it, and for that, we public broadcasters are, of course, thankful, because mm-hmm. I think that's really powerful for democracy. You want your candidates to participate, but it's only one of six that he's participating in, where you have the other candidates partaking in. It appears more than that. I don't have the exact number. So that, again, I think it just hits on this differentiation. Of course, there are some places where they are going to see where you saw some separate answers, and we can, you know, get more into that. Amtrak, for example, what have you. But I'm not sure how much that's going to carry weight with voters across the board, especially, again, given all those Rauner commercials.
Jack.
I was expecting a lot more between the two presumptive front runners, Bruce mm-hmm. Rauner and Dan Rutherford, because one of the last times out, they were all together at the ABC 7 debate yeah. in Chicago. The gloves were off. They were pounding each other. And it was Rauner at one point said, oh, gosh, it feels like beat up on Brucey morning. Beyond the one little comment or two, I'll come to Springfield. I won't need training wheels. I know my way around the place. Not very much at all.
There was one directed at Mr. Rauner, which we might hear more of later on, and that was when Senator Dillard referred to the drip of stories yeah. on mm-hmm. Rauner's yeah. past business affairs. This is, I think, similar to the stories that came out over Mitt Romney's business affairs when he ran for president, and it might hit Mr. Rauner the same way. He'll have the candidates or some other outside groups will very likely pick up on this sooner
or
later.
Well, actually, inside groups, because what's starting to happen is you're starting to see people within the Republican Party who obviously are picking sides in this race, and they're starting to promulgate some of those stories, trying to get some buzz, trying to get it into the mainstream media of the state of Illinois, where really and truly, if you look around, beyond the political junkies at this particular table, A lot of the candidates are not terribly well known downstate. There has not been an awful lot of media coverage of, for example, Bruce Rauner's allegedly clouding his daughter into the Walter Payton Prep School in Chicago, which is a very prestigious place to go. It is, you know, his connections with Arnie Duncan, the former chief of the Chicago public school system. All of those things have been playing out like crazy in the Chicago mm-hmm. media, but downstate, nobody's hearing much about it. It's not resonating with anybody. But again, the potential of the drip, drip, drip is there. There's an undercurrent going on here where you're going all the way back to some of the candidates who were talking about running for governor, piling on to Rauner, like Aaron Schock, the congressman from the Peoria area. He was upset because of a number of the ads that were run against him in his media market last year. He believes it would seem that Rauner might have been behind those. His former chief of staff is now stepping over and working with the unions to coordinate a campaign to expose, if you will, Bruce Rauner to the public.
But Rauner didn't feel the need yet to say anything in response no. at this event.
I think he does most of his speaking through ads, though.
Oh, very much so. Yeah. I mean, I don't even watch a lot of TV, and I feel like I see them all the time. I'm not sure at what point you get a diminished return on that, and people start to say, turn that guy off. But I think, you know, Jack touched on something, well, several things. First of all, How are we going to see Bruce Rauner continue to perform in these debates? He is untested. He is a political rookie. So not only has he not really performed in debates, but I was interested to see, you know, when there are some issues that aren't part of his message, when it's not about government union bosses, mm-hmm. how well-versed is he in things like fracking? I think he handled it fairly well at this point in time. Again, you have two other legislators that voted on the fracking regulations, for example. Oh, pardon. And then you had, I mean, obviously, Rutherford following that closely. He was in Springfield at that time as well. So to watch that, we'll have to continue to see how Rauner performs. You're going to have to also watch, again, this outside group, and will there be interplay from Republicans to try and bring Rauner off his pedestal? And if so, there's no one Republican that the rest of the party seems to be surrounding itself to. And so then you have the other three in a jumble still. There was none really, you know, set apart there. And so there's all of this that I'm not sure really changed coming out of this, other than you did have Kirk Dillard try and make the point that the Republicans are going to miss their chance at beating Quinn if we choose Rauner.
Chris.
Well, I just agree with you. I mean, what we have here is a candidate like we've seen so many times, not only in Illinois but across the country. The rich person comes in, neophyte candidate. You just don't know what they're going to do. And it's a possibility that he could, tomorrow, he could walk out here today while we're sitting back here and say something that blows the whole thing up. And I think that's what the three candidates are hanging in, you know, even though, for example, Dillard, very little money, very little to going on. But if he can hang in there until Rauner, if and when blows up, then it becomes a whole new race.
Let me go to Jack's issue before, because can Rauner actually buy this election? So far, he has had a lot of ads on the air that haven't been very definitive in terms of what he's going to do. It's been basically anti-Quinn. Mm-hmm. And we know financially the three candidates can't mount as much of a campaign against that, at least on television and radio. With it being four people, can he in fact spend enough money and not be very definitive and win the primary?
He's done an excellent job, not only, of course, using his own money strategically in this whole process and the run-up to this, H., but he's also done a terrific job of going behind the scenes mm-hmm. to the traditional sources of big dollars for Republican candidates in the state of Illinois and sewing those up before the other guys ever got a crack at them. Traditional supporters like Ron Gidwitz, formerly of Helene Curtis, for example, himself a former candidate for governor. He's got a lot of these people already locked in, effectively choking off the dollars that normally would have gone to a Dillard, to a Brady, to a Rutherford. Rutherford, of course, still has something of a campaign war chest. I believe it's around $1.4 million.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. He's been out working it ever since he was a state representative for this job. He's been working on this. But strategically, I think it would be very difficult, it would be dangerous to underestimate what Rauner's doing.
Well, but can he convince people? I mean, if he has spots that are saying Quinn is bad, are they also convincing people that I'm the one that can beat Quinn and not these other guys?
Yeah, I think he absolutely can. I mean, TV moves numbers. People, you know, in general, especially in state races, they're not going out and, you know, doing a systematic analysis. They're not going to the computer and finding out everything they know about Bruce Rauner. They see it on TV and say, yeah, he looks like a reasonable guy. He's got an $18 watch. I like that Carhartt. And he's rich, so he must be smart. I don't hear anything bad about him. Who else is there? I don't even know. So that's who I'll vote for. The key is if he stumbles. I think at this point it's his race to lose, because of this overwhelming finance. And it's a sad commentary on our state of our democracy, but I think that's what it is.
Illinois should have learned its lesson in terms of voters should have learned their lesson, pardon me, in terms of educating themselves about their gubernatorial candidates.
Twice electing Rod Blagojevich.
Exactly. Even after a torrent of stories about corruption mm-hmm. that ended up, that wasn't even what sent him to prison. But wow. it factors at play also to mention there are so many undecided. So, yes, Rauner's race to lose perhaps because of all this money, because of the commercials. There are so many undecideds at this point in time. I do wonder if at this point when the economy isn't as terrible as it was a couple of years back, but it's still ain't good. Mm. And if this outside effort does gain any traction in painting Rauner, particularly after his remarks on the minimum wage, as so rich that he's out of touch with the money that he's put into his own campaign and the uber-rich money that he's also locked up from the GOP, there could be, I think, some voters that are just turned off by that see it. He's not just rich and successful. He can't relate to me. Yeah, but that's something the other candidates haven't really made that argument.
Was that his 47% moment?
Exactly.
Like Mitt Romney?
I don't think it was quite there. No.
Not yet. And remember, what do you have to have? I mean, you have to have somebody else making that, telling right? that story, telling the story that this guy's out of touch, he's too rich. If nobody's telling that, or if they're saying it and nobody's listening because they don't have the money to put it on the air, or you guys
really
aren't listening to it, then it's not going to get out there.
Well, that's the thing to be watching for in the next few weeks. The Capital Facts newsletter that many of us read has been talking in recent weeks about a lot of union money is going to be dumped into the race to defeat Bruce Rauner in the primary because they don't want to have to take him on in the general election where they'd have to pump in even more and more money. And Aaron Schock's former chief of staff, yeah. Steve Scheer, is heading that up. And we're all kind of waiting to see when this is going to come out, if it is.
Mm-hmm. Big if.
Yeah.
We started the conversation with, it was a civil conversation. There weren't too many surprises, but Chris, what did you see? Was there something that caught your eye that was a little bit out of the ordinary, what you expected?
Well, I would say that if just looking at their presentation of self and the level of comfort that they had, it sort of reflected their experience. Dan Rutherford knows his stuff. He's very smooth.
He's a performer.
He's a performer. He's a likable guy.
His closing statement was the mm-hmm. most demonstrative.
That's right. Absolutely. And that's why he hanging in the weeds is sort of the best alternative to Rauner, especially with the money that he's got. Whereas Rauner, a little stiff. He's
really excited.
He was so excited. He's the most excited white man I ever saw. But he kept circling back. I mean, you could tell he was trained. Circle back to those points. Say the same thing.
Term limits from him, actually.
Right. That only came up a few times.
And, you know, that's an interesting thing. You know, when I touched on the strategy that's been evolving here, and I think this is really interesting. He's going to use that to build and build upon, of course, the general distaste we have for our politicians in the state of Illinois by, mm-hmm. well, eight years is enough. That is something that resonates with a lot of people on the street because they're sick of the Rod Blagojeviches, they're sick of the George Ryans, they're sick of hearing this drumbeat of Illinois politicians going to jail. And the popular message here with getting that out, that term limits thing out, is huge because they're getting the petition signed to get that on mm-hmm. on the election ballot.
Right, and it is one of the most popular initiatives, most popular ideas out there among the general public. People get term limits. They don't really understand what it's going to do with sort of retribution. They don't like politicians in some way, so get them out of there. You know,
it doesn't cover the governor's office, does it?
This particular doesn't. It was ironically because 37 states have term limits on their governors, and we don't.
And it could have. It could have been written in that way. And yes. I know when he first introduced it, I asked that question. He said, "Oh, well, I'll try and do that later
after this one."
This is how you get at the image or the reputation of a Michael Madigan, who has been there mm-hmm. longest. Serving speaker in the history of the Illinois House, and maybe is it possible? Is he's also the longest-serving speaker
in
the country
at the moment? Yeah,
yeah.
He is.
But Cullerton has been there for years. Redonio's been there for years. Jim Durkin has been there for years.
Two of the Republicans that are running for governor have been there for
precisely.
Years, and Rutherford before that.
Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, what he's the idea there is once I get an opportunity to have different, or the next person in the seat has different leaders, maybe less powerful leaders to deal with, More is the better.
Term limits would dramatically change the tenor of Illinois completely. We would have a very different state, and that is, I mean, gosh, I could talk about that for hours in terms of the changes that it would have for better, for worse, just the impact that it would have. There's also a ballot initiative. I know I had wanted to ask a question in terms of there's been so much focus on term limits because of Rauner's connection and his money, but there's also a ballot initiative that would change how legislative districts are drawn. Yes. And I think there's a very valid argument to be made that that would produce perhaps the greater change that term limits are ostensibly aiming for than would the term ballots initiative, or perhaps so. I mean, well, again, I think that's a different debate, but something that has gotten kind of marginalized, even though you have a lot of groups behind it right now, again, because of that Rauner cash.
Dig a little deeper into that initiative to change how we map the state of Illinois, because you have so many people, incumbents in districts that are so safe that there are no there's no one up against them in the general election.
97% of incumbents win. Two-thirds ran unopposed.
Exactly. When you have, for example, a Senate district drawn so four of them go through one downstate community like Effingham, there's got to be a better way to do that. And would it change the overall complexion of the place? Absolutely. Sure would.
Yeah, but the thing about these initiatives, given what the Supreme Court's reluctance to allow these things on the ballot, there's only been one on the ballot that survived in the whole Constitution since 1970. But what's really fascinating to me about the term limits one is it demonstrates Bruce Rauner's got some pretty sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
He's not like a Ron Gidwitz or some of these other rich guys that come through here just think, I have to throw some money out there. He's got, it's him or his people, whatever, and they know what they're doing because he associates himself with this very popular thing. It doesn't matter to him whether it wins or not. In fact, it's really draconian, and it probably won't get through the Supreme Court. It would, if it did pass, it would be by far the most severe term limits of any state in the country. But it doesn't matter because it can maybe get him, differentiate him, because again, differentiating the candidates, he's the guy that's the outsider. Everybody else, they're all the insiders. He puts that term limits on there, and that really heightens the awareness that he's somebody different.
It shows also, again, the level of strategizing, the tactical approach that he's taking. And unless there is some serious unforced error, which we didn't see tonight, he's in pretty good shape at this point. He's a solid front runner as far as the polling goes.
Let's address the question of cutting programs, cutting taxes. I didn't hear a lot of definitiveness.
No.
I was surprised that they didn't have done more research and said, well, I can cut this program and save the state this much money, et cetera.
We heard cut the State Board of Education, replace it with a smaller department.
We heard that from Mr. Brady.
We heard, I think, some specifics once we pressed on Medicaid reform, and they all want Medicaid reform to some degree.
Gas tax from Mr. Dillard.
But again, the Medicaid reform is already being done. The studies that came out of the last Medicaid reform proposal that I believe the total savings, $2.1 billion between the cuts and reductions in services, plus the generating the additional federal match, and of course Obamacare is bringing more money into that. That's already being done, and I would say that they probably know that.
Chris, I was a little surprised that they did not have more concrete programs to discuss, knowing full well this is a statewide debate. They knew that topic was going to come up, and yet it was vague, with some exceptions that Jim mentioned.
Yeah, it's scary on the one hand because the state is facing a huge structural deficit. Pension reform aside, we had some economists at our Institute of Government and Public Affairs just put out a report on Tuesday that demonstrated that even with pension reform, we've got a couple of $1 billion deficit this year, and it spreads out over time. So by 2025, it's like $13 billion per year that we're spending more than we're taking in, given everything as it sits right now. And we've gone through a series of significant cuts in government over the last few years, especially Medicaid. So it's very, higher education has been chopped to the bone. Lots of things have been cut. The funding formula for education has not kept up. So it's a tough question. So where are they
Could
going to cut?
Be, I hope I'm not being too speculative here, that the candidates believe that anything they'll have to do will be so unpleasant and onerous that they, first of all, they want to be elected, and second of all, they want to get as much buy-in as they can from legislators, hopefully in both parties, before they come out with anything.
Very much so. Yeah. It's dangerous for any of them to offer cuts because you're going to make somebody mad. You're going to anger a group whose vote you're aiming for, whose vote you need. They're scrapping for everything they can at this point in time. And so that's why it's dangerous.
With it during the campaign.
They can be tarred with it. And they are put, I mean, Pat Quinn has so many advantages right now. He has the advantage of incumbency. I mean, his campaign has done nil because guess what? It doesn't need to. He has the governor's office that is basically, you know, he's running around the state. He's still cutting ribbons from when he was first governor. And I would maintain that until this past year, until 2013, when he saw some very big successes with his base in terms of, you know, getting pensions, which again is dicey, but if you got Rauner, hey, the unions will go for Quinn over Rauner, presumably. And then, for example, same-sex marriage. Prior to that, he was really still riding on, when he first came into office, on the coattails of Rod Blagojevich, and there was so much distrust. Illinois really needed a capital bill, and he's still cutting ribbons for all of those statewide construction projects, and that has allowed him to have that. So, again, the power of incumbency, the power of the capital bill, and he can raise without fundraising limits because Bruce Rauner has that. And right now, we're all focusing on the Republicans. Hey, guys, offer some cuts. Offer some examples. And he doesn't have to.
I want Jack to respond, too, but let's point out that that Quinn is the presumptive candidate because there is opposition.
Teal Hardeman, who is a gang intervention specialist, I believe. I should know more about it. I'll be boning up on his resume in weeks to come. But I thought...
But he has basically $0 compared to Quinn.
And I think the thing, that, you know, we're waiting for the next stage of this thing, the general election. Pat Quinn must never be underestimated as a popular vote getter. He wasn't supposed to ever win a statewide election elected office because he was always the guy outside throwing rocks at it, you know, decreasing the size of the General Assembly and such. But he's won the statewide elections, and he's defeated candidates like Dan Hines in the primary the last time out that were thought to be the better candidates.
And with that, our half hour of analysis is already concluded. And you will notice that I did not ask our panelists who they thought won the election, because we're leaving that to you at home to decide who represented themselves the best in the Republican primary. Thank you so much for joining us for the only statewide debate in Illinois. We'd like to say thank you to Jim Meadows of WILL in Urbana-Champaign, to Amanda Vinicky. You know, I always stumble over your name. For years I've done that. From WUIS, and to Jack Titchener of WSIU in Carbondale, and Chris Mooney of the Institute at the University of Illinois. Thank you all, and you have a good evening.